ओम ज्ञानत्विरंधस्य ज्ञानंजनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
A yogi should see the same soul in all manifestations, for all that exists is a manifestation of different energies of the Supreme. In this way, the devotee should see all living entities without distinction. That is the realization of the Supreme Soul. Purport. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, not only does the Supreme Soul enter each and every universe, but He enters even the atoms. The Supreme Soul is present everywhere in the dormant stage, and when one can see the presence of the Supreme Soul everywhere, one is liberated from material designations. The word sarva-bhuteshu is to be understood as follows. There are four different divisions of species: living entities which sprout from the earth, living entities born of fermentation or germination, living entities which come from eggs, and living entities which come from the embryo. These four divisions of living entities are expanded in 8,400,000 species of life. A person who is freed from material designations can see the same quality of spirit present everywhere in every manifested living entity. Less intelligent men think that plants and grass grow out of the earth automatically. One who is actually intelligent and has realized the self can see that this growth is not automatic. The cause is the soul, and the forms come out in material bodies under different conditions. By fermentation in the laboratory, many germs are born, but this is due to the presence of the soul. The material scientist thinks that eggs are lifeless, but that is not a fact. From Vedic scripture, we can understand that living entities in different forms are generated under different conditions. Birds evolve from eggs, and beasts and human beings are born from the embryo. The perfect vision of the yogi or devotee is that he sees the presence of the living entity everywhere. Srila Prabhupada here in this purport refers to the four kinds of material bodies of living beings, according to the way in which they are manifest. So there's bijaja, that those which sprout from the earth, those born out of fermentation or germination, shvedaja, that's from sweat, living entities which comes from eggs, andaja, and living entities which come from the embryo, jarayoja. Now it's interesting here that it's mentioned, it's also given in the Vedic knowledge how living beings are generated, or they germinate within perspiration. That refers to germs, presumably. What would you say in modern language? Scientists. It seems to be synonymous with at least certain kinds of germs. They also, insects manifest from perspiration, as we experience, especially in Bombay in the summer. There are lots of little germs which make you itch. That comes from the perspiration. So the Vedic knowledge is another example of how the Vedic knowledge is comprehensive. The knowledge about this world is comprehensive. The conditions of different planets are described. Now, we may say that the descriptions of planets and the solar system, it doesn't match that of modern scientists, but that they have described different planets means that they are aware of them. They recently deplanetized Pluto. They relegated it from the status of a planet. But it never, they might have thought that when we discovered another planet which the ancients didn't know about. Our telescopes have gone further. But the Vedic knowledge never included what they called Pluto as a planet. Now they probably, they assigned a number to it now, it just became a number or what? Or it remains Pluto. Any idea? Because most of it's, there's so many of these asteroids or whatever, lumps floating around in space. There's so many of them, they just give numbers to them. So anyway, the point I'm making is that the Vedic knowledge, it's comprehensive. And although Vedic cosmology doesn't seem to fit with that example, getting back to that, doesn't seem to fit with modern cosmology, the fact that they had a system of astronomy by which they could predict the movements of the planets, the sunrise, the sunset in different places and different times in advance, they could, means that they, their system of astronomy worked. So it can't be, minimally we should conclude that it can't be all wrong. So anyway, the Vedic knowledge is comprehensive. It gives scientific knowledge, knowledge of the microcosm down to the Paramanu. Time is calculated by the movement of one atom over another. They had the word Paramanu, which literally means the most small. Calculation of time based upon the, from the very smallest or the unit of time, the time that it takes one atom to pass another. So microcosmically, macrocosmically, but the knowledge of how to organize social system, human nature, but the ultimate purpose of this knowledge is being described here in Srimad Bhagavatam. Comprehensive knowledge of the material world with the ultimately to come to the understanding that everything here is of no ultimate value. Seeing everything in relationship to Vasudev. Vasudev means Vishnu, all-pervading, he who resides everywhere. Vasudeva Saravam, one who sees like this, that Vasudev, he is all in all, his knowledge is perfect and complete. Bahunam janmanam ante, jnanavan mam prapadyate, Vasudeva Saravam, iti sarmahatma sudurlabha. Person of knowledge, after many lifetimes of cultivating knowledge, can come to the conclusion that Vasudev is all in all. Now it's interesting here also that in this verse, Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavan mam prapadyate. Jnanavan refers to one who is cultivating the path of spiritual knowledge. Generally the jnanamarga refers to those who cultivate the path of spiritual knowledge with the preconception that the ultimate is impersonal. And after many lifetimes of that, they may come to the conclusion that Vasudev is all in all and thus surrender to him. But samahatma sudurlabha, such a mahatma is rare. Because what usually happens is by cultivating knowledge of spirit in a vague way and neglecting to worship the Supreme Spirit, then what happens to them is yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas twayasta bhavad avishuddha buddhayaha aruhya kritchrena param padam tatapatantiyadho anadita yushmada angayaha. By neglecting to worship the lotus feet of Krishna, even though by great endeavor, with great difficulty, plesho dhikataraste sham avyakta sakta cheta sam avyakta hi gatir du kam dehavadhir vakate. As Lord Krishna specifies in Bhagavad Gita, those who are on the path of trying to understand the ultimate as avyakta, as unmanifest, their path is very troublesome. So the result of following this troublesome path is that they get liberation from material existence. They go to Parampad, to the supreme abode, but they don't enter there. They remain in the haze. They remain in the Brahma Jyoti, from which they fall because of neglecting to worship the lotus feet of Krishna. So this is the Jnana Marga. One cultivates knowledge, but without knowledge of Krishna, it is Shriyashritim Bhaktir Vidasya Te Vipo Klishyanti Ye Kevala Bodha Labdhiye. That persons attain a certain kind of knowledge, but, and they think this is it, this is the topmost. But their cultivation of knowledge is like husking husked rice. The rice that you get the stalks, you don't know because you live in Bombay. Maybe if you're from the village, you've seen. They get the rice and then they tie it together and beat it like this. And then out of the husk comes the grain. So after it comes out, it still looks the same. But it's not the same because the grain has come out. So if you think, well, okay, let's try again and again beat it. So you can go on threshing, but nothing will come out. It's an example which is given of a useless endeavor. So that is the Jnana Marga. Here, Jnana means to cultivate spiritual knowledge. That was the purpose of the Vedic culture. There's so much knowledge of the material world, but the Jnana Marga doesn't mean to cultivate material knowledge. There are two kinds of vidya mentioned in the Vedas. Paravidya and aparavidya. Both are described in the Vedic literature. Paravidya means knowledge of spirit, and aparavidya means knowledge of this material world. So even though there is so much knowledge of this material world given in Shastra, Shastra itself doesn't consider it to be very important. And in the Vedic culture, the knowledge of this material world is not given very high emphasis, because they know that beyond this material world, there is the spiritual world. That spiritual existence is real existence. That's why traditionally in the Vedic culture we find that great respect was given to persons who cultivated spiritual life, you could say a religious focus was the center of that culture, but persons who fully focused on that, genuine sadhus, they were highly respected. Still, to some extent, that's going on in India today. That there's respect for sadhus, although people don't know what a sadhu is, and even the so-called sadhus don't know what a sadhu is supposed to be. It's a very confused situation. So we can say the culture is there without the knowledge that is the actual life of that culture. And the culture cannot remain long without the knowledge that is at its heart. The present cultural situation of India is something like a chicken with its head cut off. It flaps around for some time, but it won't flap around for long. The head is cut off. That, again, the example is given in Shastra of the head of society, figuratively, the head means the physical head in the example is the Brahmanas. So Prabhupada often said that without the head, without intelligence, the body cannot live. Or if the intellectual leaders of society, they're not real Brahmanas, they're not Brahma Janatiti Brahmana, they don't know what is the ultimate truth. They don't know what that Param Brahma, Param Dharma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If they don't know this, then there'll be so many disturbances in society, as we see practically nowadays. So Brahmanas, they would be cognizant of Brahmagyan. Brahmagyan, Brahma means the highest truth. And Brahma also means the Vedas. So they would be cognizant. Cognizant means they're trained, not just automatically. Of course, Rishi means those who are mantra drashta. They would perceive the mantras and reveal that to human society. But even the rishis, they it's not that they're not trained in Vedic knowledge. Then they may get more revelation also. So the Brahmanas, they have the spiritual knowledge, but also very practical knowledge. And some may be more expert in some areas than others, because apart from Bhagawan, everyone cannot know everything. So different persons would be expert in different kinds of vidya, material and spiritual. And most respected were those who had the spiritual knowledge and spiritual realization, which is that spiritual realization is being described in this verse, how one should see the Supreme Soul within all souls. Now, according to one's concept, this seeing the Supreme Soul in all souls will be impersonal, a vague idea that all souls are one. But then the more specific understanding is that of the pure devotee, who understands that all souls are one inasmuch as they are all sheltered under the one Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they see all souls, all living beings as spirit soul under the autonomy, under the jurisdiction of the Supreme Soul, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. What is that verse? The symptom of the pure devotee. Sarva bhuta eshu bhuta. What is that? Esha bhagavata utama. Sarva bhuta eshu yapa shed. I'm not remembering now. That's well known verse. Who can say that from the 11th canto? Sarva bhuta eshu yapa shed. Bhagavat bhavam atmani. Bhuteshu Bhagavati Atmana Saesha Bhagavatotama. The topmost devotee sees all living beings as part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he sees Yomam Pashati Sarvam Chamayi Pashati Tasyaham Napranashami says. Sachame napranashati. Early morning. Has to be an excuse. Seeing Krishna in everything, in everyone, and everyone in Krishna. Such a devotee, Krishna says, is not lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him. So this is the vision that a pure devotee cultivates, seeing Krishna everywhere, in everything. This gives meaning to an otherwise meaningless world. How to see Krishna within everything? It's not such a simple thing. It's not so often people ask, well, how come we understand the existence of God when there's so much suffering and injustice in the world? Seeing Krishna everywhere and in everything means, in the beginning stage, that means seeing with Shastra as the eyes. Shastra Chakshuhu. One should see with the eyes of Shastra. How will we see Krishna everywhere? I see a fan, I don't see Krishna dancing. I see a chandelier. Where is Krishna? But by Shastric understanding, we understand that Krishna is Goloka eva nivasatya kila atma bhuto. He is within his own abode. He's also within every living being. He is within every atom. Krishna is within everything, and the sufferings of the living beings are brought about by their own activities. Purusha sukha dukkhanam bhoktritve hetu ruchyate. The living being who thinks himself an enjoyer of this world, by that very misconception brings about his own so-called enjoyment, thinking himself the enjoyer, and its inevitable concomitant suffering. This understanding has to be cultivated, that one can see Krishna in everything. Just like Prabhupada said that when he was in Calcutta during the war, 1942, there was bombing, Japanese bombing. And so most of the city was evacuated. Calcutta became empty, except for some persons who had to stay for some reason or other. So Prabhupada said, I had to stay for some business, whatever. So the bombs were coming, and Prabhupada thought, well, this is Krishna in another form. So that's also Krishna. That's advancement. If you think that now someone is coming to kill me or some bomb is coming to kill me, you can say, well, that's Krishna's wish, if one can say like that. That's advanced. Otherwise, something bad happens to us and we want to blame it on someone else. But someone who's advanced in knowledge, who's got Shastric knowledge, they say, well, someone came up to me and for no reason slapped me in the face. And a spiritually advanced person thinks that, well, I must have slapped someone in the face. I must have slapped them in the face previously, in a previous life. So thank you very much. Now you freed me from that karmic debt. That requires a lot of advancement, because we're all attached in this material world. If someone steals from us, we're attached and we become distressed. But an advanced person thinks that, well, anyway, it didn't belong to me, and I must have performed that sin in a previous life, so now I'm getting the reaction. Of course, a devotee, his outlook may be a little different. Sometimes people are surprised. Why devotees are so busy collecting money and spending money and is it? But an actual devotee may do so, but with attachment to Krishna. There was an incident, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He had lectured in the morning on detachment. Then after his lecture, he went up to his room and was writing. In those days, writing meant you got your pen and you dipped it in the ink and you'd write a few words and then again you'd dip it in the ink. So someone had come and brought some bananas. That's the culture. You visit a sadhu, you bring some fruit. Usually something should be brought. Usually some fruit or some money or something. So the banana was on his desk and he was writing and a monkey jumped in and swiped the banana. And Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, just seeing that, got that and just tried to grab the bananas as the monkey stole them. And in the meantime, the inkpot got spilled and all his writing was spoiled. So one disciple, seeing this, very foolishly said to his Guru Maharaj that, this morning you were speaking on detachment and now just for the sake of these bananas you got so upset, you jumped up and you spoiled all your writing. How is that? He said, those bananas were meant for the service of Radharani. That's why. He's not thinking, my bananas, I want to enjoy them. So if one actually has this understanding, then he may appear to be very attached, but his attachment is to Krishna. That's why we see Srila Prabhupada, for the sake of serving Krishna, he made so many big opulent temples like this one. So people may misunderstand that, well, he's attached to opulence, but he's not attached to opulence. He's attached to serving Krishna. He's attached that Krishna should be served very nicely. An opulent temple is just to demonstrate to people of the world that instead of making all arrangements for yourself to live very comfortably, you should make arrangements how Krishna should be served with everything, all the best things of this world. And that's the tradition, not only in India, but we see in the Western countries also. There are so many big churches all of Europe. Every practically 3-4 miles, there's a big church. They're the only buildings which have survived going back hundreds of years, apart from big castles which the kings built. That means that the people themselves were living simply because their buildings didn't last. They didn't build very solid buildings for themselves. But for God, they made big temples for His glorification. So Prabhupada wanted to demonstrate this principle, but personally, his preference was for living very simply. We saw in early 1977, Prabhupada was living for a few weeks in Bhuvaneshwar. At that time there was no temple built. The temple came quite a long time later. Prabhupada was living in a hut, and the most modern facility was a tube well pumping like this. That was in that time in most of Orissa, that was something special. Most of Orissa at that time, the well meant you bring the bucket, you throw the bucket down and you pull it up like that. So Prabhupada had a little modern facility, a tube well, which people think, now in the villages, people think, well, that's very backward. We need taps with water. We have to go to the city to get that. So Prabhupada was very content to live like that. In Mayapur also, little hut at the entrance, Prabhupada was living in. So personally, he liked that. He said, I like to live like this. This is sattvic. I like to live like this. But his disciples made beautiful quarters for him all over the world. Many of them are preserved. Here in Bombay, his quarters are preserved. In London, in Melbourne, in so many places, Los Angeles, Prabhupada's quarters. Opulent, they're preserved. Why opulent? Well, one should offer good things to the Guru that he shall use in the service of Krishna, and also to preach to materialistic people. If there's a nice setting, they take it, that this person is very important, they feel comfortable. If they're materialistic people, they're not used to sitting on the floor in a mud hut. And although they might respect the sadhu for living like that, they're not much attracted to come and spend much time there. So the opulent facilities are for serving Krishna, not for the appropriation by the sadhus for their own sense enjoyment. So one who sees Krishna everywhere can see this world, how to live in it, how to utilize it for the sake of serving Krishna. Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, he lived in Vrindavan, not all the six Goswamis, Chakvat, Turna, Mashesha, Mandalapati, Srining, Sada, Tuchavat, Bhudvat, Dina, Ganesha, Kokarunaya, Kopina, Kantashrita. They gave up the aristocratic way of life, much opulence, to live in the forest of Vrindavan. With their clothing was kopin, some loincloth and kanta, a patchwork quilt. So they lived like that. That was suitable for their service. They didn't need opulence because they were showing the path of renunciation, how one should be renounced. And they were writing books. So that was suitable for their service. But for distributing the knowledge of these books in the modern world, Bhaktivinoda Thakur lived as taking the position of a respectable member of society and preached Krishna consciousness. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was living a very renounced life, just like his Gurudev, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. But then when he was ordered by Babaji Maharaj to preach Krishna consciousness, he accepted sannyas, and after that apparently lived in comfort. After taking sannyas, he apparently lived more comfortably. But that was for the sake of informing everyone that Vasudeva Sarvam. Vasudeva is all in all. And please don't lean on the temple pillar. Hare Krishna. The temple pillar is not built for us to lean on. Hare Krishna. It's time for the end of class.